Amen.
Amen. So I've mentioned in probably many previous stories a man named Peter Story, who's a professor of mine, who's also the bishop in South Africa during apartheid and worked to bring the churches together and to get rid of apartheid. Worked really hard with Desmond Tutu, actually, who was the Archbishop of the Episcopal Church. And I recently came across a story about Peter Story and Desmond Tutu that I wanted to share with you. After apartheid fell, they were invited to a party that some of the African leaders were throwing who had been brought into the government after apartheid fell. And they asked Peter Story and Desmond Tutu, they said, "Do you know why we're throwing this party for you? Why we invited you?" And so Tutu and Story said, "Well, because we helped. Like, we helped you through this hard time of apartheid, and we helped to bring you down." And they said, "No, that's actually not it." This is what they said to them. They said, "No, we're throwing this party for you because you baptized us. You told us who we were, and you remembered when no one else did." They baptized them, and they remembered who they were when no one else did. This is what Story and Tutu did for so many of the Africans in South Africa during the struggle. I hope it's what you have people in your life doing for you, but no matter what, it is what Jesus does for you. Knows you, remembers you, and knows who you are when maybe no one else does. It's what Jesus did for the man today in our story, this man possessed by demons. It's a bit of a strange story, kind of a dramatic story if you read through it. If you ever want some interesting depictions, go on YouTube. There's lots of very interesting depictions of this story, some more dated than others. But in this story, you have a man who it says is possessed by demons. We don't really know what's wrong with him, but that's all that he's seen for in his town. In fact, he's called the demoniac, right? Sometimes the Gerasene demoniac, because he lives in the place of the Gerasenes, some place, like an area. And, you know, now, in our culture, we're taught not to say things like, "He's a disabled person," right? We say, "They're a person with a disability." Because we don't want a person to be described by just one thing. And I totally get that. Nobody apparently was doing that for the demoniac. He was known for just that one thing. And as much as I love what we do when we change the word disabled to person with a disability, I think we still, in our culture, tend to know people for just one thing, don't we? Think about all of the people that we do that to, all of the groups of the people we other, because we think we know one thing about them, right? We do it for race, we do it for gender, we do it to immigrants, we do it to the elderly, right? Or we do it to youth, "Oh, they're too young, they can't know anything," right? Or "They're too old, they can't do anything." We do it to the disabled. We do it all the time to all kinds of people. We know people for just one thing. I once had a woman in my office just sobbing, and her son was severely autistic. And she said to me, "All that I want, and I love Tyler for his, with his autism, it's a part of him, but what I really want is for people to see him for more than his autism." That's all people could see when they looked at him. It's what we do. It's not what Jesus does. Jesus goes into those places where we think we know that one thing and goes in to discover more and to be with the people who are on those margins and who are marginalized, like this man who lives in the tombs. And what's interesting when Jesus goes in this story, I love this. The man says, and you assume it's the demon speaking here, "What do you have to do with me, Jesus?" Which, it's kind of a weird translation, because basically what they're saying is, like, "What are you doing here? This is our territory. We've got this man. He's under our control." But Jesus doesn't care, because Jesus will go anywhere and to anyone under any conditions, because all people are his children. And so Jesus does this, and he casts out the demons. Now, I don't mean to demonize actually changes it when he takes the demon out of the man, or the demons out of the man. Look at how the townspeople, who were probably doing their best, react. This is such an interesting part of the story for me. You would think this man, who'd been living among the tombs, when he was sitting there, cleaned up, and in his right mind, people would throw a party for him. But did you read or hear what they did? It said they were afraid. They were afraid, and they asked Jesus to leave. Get out of here, Jesus. We don't want anything to do with you anymore. And I was thinking about that, and why? Why would people do that? Why aren't they throwing a party for this man? And I've come up with a couple of things I can sort of live with in my mind. Maybe you have more. And the first one I thought is, it's just beyond, right? Like this, these miracles scare us. And when things happen that we don't understand, it makes us nervous. And also, isn't it easier to keep people in the boxes we put them? Because then in our mind, we don't have to reshift things, right? The world just stays as we know it, and that's more comfortable. I was thinking about this. He's like that uncle. You know what I mean? Like that uncle, the uncle who just says inappropriate things and isn't very nice always. He actually didn't treat my aunt very well at all. And he was always that uncle. And I never really liked to be around him. And my aunt finally divorced him. But he still lives in the same town as my parents. So one day, sadly, he actually fell off a ladder and he hit his head and has had recurring cognitive difficulties now because of this fall. But the other strangest thing happened. He turned into a really nice guy. Right? You know, it sounds strange, but he turned into this really nice guy. But when I see him, and I don't see him all that often, but when I do, I kind of don't know what to do. Right? Because in my head, he's still that uncle. And I keep waiting for him to say something inappropriate or do something mean or dumb, you know? And I haven't been able to shift because he's still that uncle to me. It's hard sometimes to move people into new categories, especially when you have a past when you think how things should be acting. But let's say we can even wrap our emotional and mental and we can get the past them being what they were in the past to the new. I think there's something else in this story. And I think that's the cost that the townspeople were imagining might come with Jesus and all the things he was doing. There's a part of the story, a little character in the story I don't think we think about very often. And that is not the pigs. Everybody always feels so bad for the pigs. Totally get it. Those pigs were in the wrong place at the wrong time, right? But what about the swineherd and the person who employed the swineherds, right? So the swineherds, it says in this story, go off and tell everybody this story. And why do you think they're telling this story? Maybe because it was amazing, but I also wonder if they've got to cover their butts because 2,000 pigs just jumped off a cliff, right? And it wasn't their fault. And so they need to tell this story. And then can you imagine the cost to the person who owned those pigs? That's not a small chunk of change at that time. 2,000 pigs are gone. There was a cost to this man being healed. And I have to wonder if the man who owned those pigs is saying, restoration of a man's mental health and place in society versus a lot of money. And you start doing this, and you wonder if it's worth it. And of course, we look at it and say, of course it's worth it. This man is healed. But really think about it. Was it worth it to that man? Would it have been? And what is worth it to us? What are we willing to give up or change so that other people can be restored in our community? So that other people can be included and brought in from the margins? Because if we're serious about doing that, it will cost us. It will cost us money and time. It could cost us relationships. It certainly can cost us psychological and emotional toll. Peter Story and Desmond Tutu, when they worked in South Africa, just didn't toddle around saying, "Oh, people are created equal," and everybody was kind to them. They had death threats. At one point, they were kidnapped. They had bombs show up in their mailbox. But they had decided at some point that this thing they were called to, this thing of racial reconciliation and black and white being equal in South Africa, was worth the cost of their lives. It was something they were willing to die for. What are we willing to pay the cost for? You have to think, these people in the town, when Jesus did this, were like, "Oh, he's going to do more of this. What's going to happen to us? We were pretty good. We know that guy out on the hill was a little crazy and trouble, but we were all pretty good. And what's it going to cost us if Jesus keeps coming in here and upending things?" And that's what Jesus did. Over and over and over. And it cost him his life. We are called to be people who look beyond that one thing. If we are followers of Jesus, we are called to that because that's what Jesus does for us. And it might be hard, but when we can do it, it brings such deep joy. Peter Story and Desmond Tutu, I have to tell you, are two of the most joy-filled people I have ever had the honor of being near. They have endured things most of us can't even imagine. But they are filled with so much joy because they believe so deeply in the humanity of everyone in God's creation. And they don't just say it, they live it. And that brings joy. What is it worth to you to bring in all of those people who are on the margins, who are left out, who are known for only one thing? We are called to follow, and sometimes it doesn't seem worth it to us. But know this, God always thinks it's worth it. God will always think you are worth it. You were worth enough that Jesus died for you. And died for the person sitting next to you, and died for the person down at the border detained, and died for the women sitting up in the Bedford Hills Correctional Facility, and died for the people in all of the institutions around here, died for all. Because God sees the humanity in each and every one of us. That is why we follow a God who heals and holds and knows. And I pray that when I am asked to consider the cost of what it means to follow that God, I don't think it's too much. That instead I step forward in the love and grace that God gives me.